Time now for the latest world sport from the BBC. Hello, I'm Kath Leahy. Coming up in the next 10 minutes, FIFA's officials meet to discuss the World Cup in Qatar in 2022. Spurs win again in the Europa League and Wayne Rooney returns for England ahead of next week's World Cup qualifiers. BBC Sport understands that FIFA will announce later on Friday that Qatar doesn't face any threat to its right to host the 2022 World Cup. It's also understood that a task force will be set up to examine the impact of moving the World Cup away from the traditional months of June and July. BBC's sports news correspondent Richard Conway has more.
Sheikh Salman Al Khalifa, he's the president of the Asian Football Confederation. He is being considered to head a task force which will examine the issues that inevitably moving a World Cup to a date outside of its traditional summer time slot will entail, and that of course includes the dates for the competition itself. Now, the task force, I understand, will engage with all the significant stakeholders such as the domestic leagues, and they'll be asked to report back to FIFA within a short space of time with a plan of action for dates and of course a schedule for that tournament. Outside of that, I should also say that FIFA are preparing a statement which will talk about the migrant workers issues in Qatar, and I'm told again from FIFA sources that it will say and talk about how they will observe events relating to those issues in Qatar, they are expected to be a strong statement on that from Sepp Blatter when he speaks to the media tomorrow afternoon.
So should we now be expecting the leagues in Europe particularly to start planning what they're going to be doing that year, because its disruption to Northern Hemisphere football is inevitable now, isn't it, really?
Well, I think that's it, and I think there has been a creeping degree of pragmatism. You know, we've heard from the European Clubs Association have said that perhaps as a one-off, this might be acceptable. Of course, the Premier League, up till now, have been resolute in their opposition to this. They have said that it would cause chaos to the domestic league. So their reaction to this will be, I think, key. But, of course, this task force will need to consult with them. They will need to reach an agreement, consensus, over how a World Cup can be played outside of its traditional time slot of June and July, and when it will fit into the international calendar.
BBC's Richard Conway reporting. Now to the Europa League group stages, where Tottenham Hotspur exposed the weaknesses in Andy Makhachkala's new-look squad, who are now, of course, without their star players, winning 2-0 in Moscow to keep their perfect start to the group stages. Jermaine Defoe and Nasser Chadli both scored in the first half for Spurs, leaving their manager Andre Villas-Boas delighted by the way his players equipped themselves.
Always tricky because Angie looked to be very threatening on the counter-attack. So giving us the ball and the initiative and attacking our spaces whenever we lost the ball. But I think through what we've done in the first half, we deserve the result.
Wayne Ratledge earned Swansea a Hartford 1-0 home win against the Swiss side Saint-Gallen. It was an incident-packed encounter, as the BBC's Andy Gillis explains.
Swansea emerged victorious from a frantic game littered with incident and some questionable refereeing. The winning goal was scored by Wayne Routledge, who touched Boney's shot over the line after 52 minutes, but there was so much more to relate. Saint-Gallen had an early penalty for Tiendali's handball, but Karanovic's tame kick was saved by Tremel, while Swansea could have had their own spot kick in the first half when Michu was caught by the defender's studs as he went to head the ball. He then spent 8.5 minutes off the pitch while the flow of blood from the wound to his head was stemmed. Saint-Gallen had chances to equalise, the closest when Nater struck the post with a fine shot, but Swansea held out to make it 2 wins out of 2 in the group.
The Russian side Rubin Kazan are also looking strong in the competition. They have 6 points and 9 goals from their first two games, with a 4-0 win over the Belgian side Zuta Waregem. Valencia recovered from an opening loss with a 2-0 win over Kubin Krasnodar. There were victories too for PSV Eindhoven, Wigan Athletic and Eintracht Frankfurt. The Manchester United striker Wayne Rooney has been recalled to the England squad after missing the last two qualifiers following a cut to his head. The Liverpool forward Daniel Sturridge also returns from injury to take his place in the 23-man squad for their matches against Montenegro and Poland. The England manager Roy Hodgson is looking forward to finally pairing the two together.
Well, I was pretty excited before the last two important games. I was watching Sturridge, I was watching Rooney, and I was thinking these two players are in great form, and you know there's lots of goals in them, in the sense that they can create goals through their individual ability, their individual brilliance. And luckily we lost them, but hopefully we won't this time.
to athletics, and Jamaica's double Olympic 200 metre champion Veronica Campbell-Brown has received a public warning from her country's athletics association following her positive drug tests in May. Campbell-Brown was provisionally suspended at the time, missing the remainder of the season, and with it the chance to defend her 200 metres world title in Moscow in August. BBC's athletics commentator Ed Harry has more.
I've spoken to Veronica Campbell-Brown's agent, Claude Bryan. He's told me today, the only comment I'm making is no comment. That's perhaps understandable. This is only a recommendation by the Jamaican's disciplinary panel. It has to be ratified by the world governing body, the IAAF. It would be unusual for them to query a verdict, but they've got a month and a half in which to challenge it. Once we know whether they will or not, then the World Anti-Doping Agency can take a further 3 weeks before it decides whether it should appeal against it. So this could carry on into December. We haven't had the disciplinary panel's judgment published, just their conclusion. But that conclusion, which they have reached, a public reprimand, they can only recommend that if they're satisfied this substance was not taken to enhance performance. Diuretics can be used as masking agents, which is why they are on the banned list. But in this case, because it is only a warning, they must believe that panel there was no intention to use them for that purpose.
But she tested positive for that banned substance in May. She then was suspended in June. If no wrongdoing then, why the suspension?
It says quite clearly, why isn't this whole process sped up? A provisional suspension pretty much has cost her a season of her career. For an athlete already in her early 30s, she was a defending world champion in the 200 metres. She didn't get to defend that gold medal in Moscow. And look at the case of Asafa Powell. Different case, another Jamaican though, different substance. He fails a test in the middle of this year. He won't appear before his panel in Jamaica until January. So the time this is taking is a huge issue for the athletes involved, especially when in Campbell Brown's case, it's a warning and not a suspension.
Ed Harry reporting. Now to Formula One, and Fernando Alonso is refusing to give up on the title race ahead of Friday's qualifying for Sunday's Korean Grand Prix. The reigning champion, Sebastian Vettel, has a 60-point lead at the top of the standings, but second-placed Alonso is taking inspiration from Team USA's impressive fight back in this year's America's Cup. More from the BBC's Formula One commentator, Jonathan Ledyard.
Putting it bluntly, Alonso needs all the inspiration, all the help he can get at the moment. Vettel's show of strength in the last race in Singapore makes Alonso's mission look nigh on impossible. He's 60 points down on Vettel with another 150 left to play for over the final six races. Throw in the fact that Vettel has led all but 12 of the three Korean Grand Prix so far. He's always started from the front row as well. And you can understand why Alonso and Ferrari are invoking Ben Ainsley as the new patron saint of lost causes.
The president and me, we're still thinking that anything can happen. We saw also in the America's Cup with the Oracle team, it was 1-8 and 9-8 at the end. So we know that it's difficult, but you have two lucky races or whatever, and things can change very quickly. But we need a lot of luck, we know that.
Alonso's mention there of the Ferrari president, Luca di Montezemolo, won't go unnoticed back in Italy after their recent spat. Alonso needs team solidarity now and next season in 2014 with the imminent arrival of Kimi Raikkonen as his new teammate. He'll also be well aware that if Vettel wins this race in Korea and the next one in Japan next weekend, while he himself fails to finish both, it's all over. Vettel will be a four-time champion.
Jonathan Ledyard reporting. Finally, some gymnastics news and... some gymnastics news, and Japan's Koi Uchimura has secured a fourth consecutive all-around title at the World Gymnastic Championships in Antwerp. That's a world record. He adds the crown to the all-around title he won at the Olympics in London last year. Lots more on all those stories on our website, bbc.com/sport. That's the latest BBC Sport.